Hi, and welcome to Stefan Levera Podcast, a show about Bitcoin and Austrian economics brought to you by Swan Bitcoin. You can use swan.com or the Swan app for Apple or Android phones for safe and easy Bitcoin buys. With Swan, it's really easy to automate your purchases, so you can set up a recurring purchase plan. Or of course, if you want to do a smash buy or a one-time buy, that's available also. Swan gives you free custody in your own legally owned trust account, and not your keys, not your coins. Of course, there is also free automated withdrawals to self-custody. So with Swan, the philosophy is to try and automate your SAT stacking, because many people can forget if they are trying to manually purchase. And so automating those purchases is a great idea. Of course, you have to consider there is volatility with Bitcoin. And so with Swan, there is such a great focus on education. So when you sign up with Swan, you'll receive a range of educational material, whether that is the Swan newsletter, some of the Swan content and shows that are out there. There is Pacific Bitcoin coming up. There's a range of educational material as well as books. So go to swan.com/Levera and you'll get $10 of Bitcoin dropped into your account when you start stacking with Swan. Now, when we send Bitcoin on-chain transactions, I like to use mempool.space as my Bitcoin blockchain explorer of choice. I use it to help target the fee that I'm sending for my transactions. Mempool.space is a comprehensive Bitcoin explorer. It covers the entire ecosystem. You can see the mempool, you can see the blockchain, you can see second layer networks like the Lightning Network. And with mempool.space, you don't have to trust a third party because you can run it yourself. They've got a range of awesome features on their site, so it's a great one to go and check out and actually learn a little bit about how Bitcoin works. Now, if you're with an enterprise, mempool.space offers customized mempool instances. You can have your company's branding, increased API limits, and mempool.space is one of the most popular explorers in the space. So it's great exposure there. So go and learn more at mempool.space/enterprise. Are you ready for something big? BTC Prague is coming June 8th to 10th. This is going to be the biggest Bitcoin event in Europe. I'm excited to go. I'm going to be one of the MCs. There is an awesome lineup of speakers, with more speakers being announced. People like Michael Saylor, Giacomo Zucco, Ben DeWall from Swan, Obi from Fedi, and so many more. This is going to be a huge conference and event. There will be multiple days where you can find something for you, whether that's the industry day and you're more business focused. There'll be a day that's more focused on just having it accessible for new people. And there will also be a whale zone area where there'll be premium food and drinks available for all 3 days, as well as an exclusive party event available for those on a whale ticket. So to get your ticket, it's btcprague.com. Use code Levera, and the dates are June 8th to 10th. So keep that in mind. Check out your flights and hotels to get there. So for today, I speak with Hampus Sjöberg. He is the creator of Blixt Wallet, and some of you may know him if you were around at the time of Taproot activation. He's the guy who created the Taproot.watch website, where people were tracking how the activation at the time was going with speedy trial. Now, Hampus joins me to talk about a range of things: LNURL, comparison with Bolt 12, Blixt Wallet, and trade-offs of going custodial and non-custodial, and trying to manage the balance of helping people have a non-custodial experience in a way that's slick. Also, we chat a little bit about Lightning Box and his views on Bitcoin soft forks. So I'm sure you will enjoy my chat with Hampus. Hampus, welcome to the show.
Thank you.
So I'm a fan of your work. I've been watching and learning a little bit from what you're saying on Twitter as well, and recently had a chance to play around with Blixt Wallet as well, which I know you're working on. And so, yeah, I guess for me, you first came across my radar when you were doing the Taproot.watch website, right? You were doing this Taproot activation watch, and I think after that is when you became a lot more involved, or maybe you were already involved, but that was when you became well known.
Yeah, I mean, I've been into Bitcoin for quite some time, but around the Taproot.watch days, like, this site got a lot of traction. So after that, I got more and more like publicly involved on Twitter and so on. And also, that's around the time Blixt Wallet started getting traction as well that summer. So yeah, that's kind of how it all went down.
Yeah, for sure. And I know you are also part of the LNURL mafia. So do you want to tell us a little bit about that?
Sure, yeah. Shall I go through LNURL as well then, I suppose, and explain what it is?
Yeah, so for listeners who aren't familiar, LNURL is this, you know, way to quickly exchange invoices and information. So do you want to just explain a little bit,
yeah, for sure,
just at a very high level, what is LNURL?
Yeah, so NNRL is basically a set of protocols that helps you interact with the web. Like, for example, let's say you want to withdraw money from a website, like an exchange or whatever. You can basically scan an NNRL code, and your wallet, if it supports the protocol, will automatically withdraw the money from there. So you don't need to paste a Lightning invoice and so on. You can just scan the QR code and you're good to go. So it's kind of like a set of protocols that helps you with these things. With the most popular one is LNURL Pay, which is basically a way to have like a static code that you can pay towards. And on top of that, it also builds upon the LN Lightning address format, which is basically like easy to read and easy to write handle, like hampus@blixtore.com, that you can pay with a supporting Lightning wallet. So it's like a set of nice to have protocols that helps you interact with the web.
Yeah, let me try and explain a little bit. So with Lightning, instead of working with a Bitcoin address, we work with a Lightning invoice. And typically, people have to code in how many sats to pay for that invoice, as an example. And then it can be a bit clunky if you are a user who has a mobile phone with a Lightning wallet on it or a Lightning app, and the website is the one trying to pay you out. Then do you have to like do some awkward exactly this many sats and have this awkward, you know, experience where you have to think about what the fee might be, or do you have LNURL withdrawal? So as an example, I've seen this on websites such as LN Markets and others out there, where if you have a little custodial account on that platform, you can instantly withdraw with Lightning using LNURL withdrawal as an example. Now, I also understand there are different types of LNURL. So I know there's LNURL pay, LNURL withdraw, LNURL auth to authenticate, yes, and also LNURL channel, and maybe one or two others. Can you just talk a little bit about the differences between those?
Yeah, sure. Yeah. We all went through the LNURL withdraw protocol. So it lets you withdraw money from an exchange and so on, which is quite neat. But you also have LNURL channel, which is basically a way to open a channel with some party. Like, for example, there is a very popular service called LNBig, where you can basically like purchase, buy like a channel from them. And if you use Blixt wallet or any supporting wallet, you can just buy the channel and then you just scan the code for it to get opened, basically. So it's also like a convenience thing. Like, you can easily just scan something instead of having to do things manually, so to say. And you also have the LNURL auth protocol, which is a way to use your Lightning wallet or Lightning private key to log in to a website. So you don't need to have like a username and password anymore. You can just like leverage your Lightning wallet and the private key that you have there to log in to a website. So then you don't have the risk of them leaking your password anymore, because there is no password stored on the service in question. So that's like a very neat way to like circumvent the problem of username and passwords getting leaked. Then you have the last one is LNURL Pay, I suppose, which I went over a bit, but it's basically like a way to pay a web shop or a person without having to manually create an invoice every time. Like it's like a invoice requesting service, like because Lightning always works with invoices, right? So you always have to have invoice in the normal circumstances. So it's a way to automate that kinds of things.
Yeah, and so that can be handy where a person needs a static QR code and they don't want to just do on-chain static QR codes, or in the case where they don't want to have a paynim, and also pre-Bolt 12, which we'll get into as well.
Yeah, because
I know there's been some back and forth and there's maybe some overlap, but I guess they don't exactly... Bolt 12 and LNURL don't do exactly the same things. I think that's important to make it clear for people. But I guess one of the downsides is with LNURL, you have to be running your own web server, or you are custodially using somebody else's. So could you just elaborate and explain that and how that's working for people?
I think that, like as you said, like if you use LNURL Pay, you basically have to have a web server somewhere, right? Because it works with domains like HTTP and so on, So it's not like Lightning native like Bolt 12 is, because in Bolt 12 you do the invoice requesting inside like Lightning itself. So that has some benefits there. I will say that, like, suppose you just want to have some QR code somewhere, you're not a very tech-savvy person, then I think having a Bolt 12 code could be beneficial. But let's say you have like a web shop or something like that. With LNUL Pay, you can also include metadata, like an image of the payment, or even like a link for the receipt in the end, or so on. So you have a lot of extensions to LNUL Pay that you can benefit from. So, like, I will say that LNUL Pay is more for like business to customer and so on, like making purchases and so on. And Bolt 12 is better for just normal users, I'll say, and you know. You need some easy way to have a static code, basically. That will be the difference between them.
And so it'd be useful to just talk about some of the distinctions there, because as I understand, the way Bolt 12 came about is, I think Rusty was basically looking at what was happening at the application level with Lightning developers out there who were sort of, I think, as I understand, they were looking for certain functionality that did not exist just natively in Lightning's protocol. And they were saying, well, let's just build this into an application level. And then I think, as I understand, Rusty and maybe some other Lightning developers were at the protocol level thinking, could we do something like this at the protocol layer, which maybe does not require a web server or some other elements of that? So I'm curious your thoughts on how to contrast those. I know they're not fully comparable, but they are similar in certain things.
I mean, yeah, I think both sides came from the same, like, the need for having some kind of invoice fetching service, basically. Because that is what LNUL Pay and Bolt 12 does, like, in the end. It attempts to fetch an invoice in the most common scenario, right? But LNUL Pay was specifically made for, like, commerce and those kinds of things. So I think that's kind of like a difference between Bolt 12 and LNUL Pay, at least in my view, because Bolt 12 is more generic, let's say, or it's not specifically for commerce like LNUL Pay is. But yeah, there are some, it overlaps a bit, but I think that both will live like in parallel for the foreseeable future. I don't think that they will replace each other, so to say, that one will win. I know for sure that for my own project, Blix Toilet, I will continue to use LNUL Pay for my users and so on. So we'll see about that. But it's also, I think that Bolt 12 is a very ambitious project with a lot of features. So I hope that they will see it ready and finished soon, but it's a lot of work, it seems like, to get it rolling. And in comparison to LNUL Pay, like, there you only have like conventional web technology, basically. Like, it's a web server, it's like HTTP, it's JSON that you send back and forth and so on. So it's a very like normal things for a developer to deal with.
Yeah, okay. And so as I understand, part of this is about the element of being able to easily use Bitcoin and easily take donations, as an example. Because I think right now today, now of course in our more hobbyist Bitcoiner communities, or let's say enthusiast Bitcoiner communities, people understand, oh, okay, maybe I should set up a BTC Pay server and take donations that way, as an example. But if somebody who just more peripherally knows about Bitcoin, the typical way is they would just have a Bitcoin wallet and they'll just post a Bitcoin address just publicly. Yeah. And that's just that's a thing that a lot of people have been doing. You could argue that that works because it's just kind of simple and effective. Trying to take that into a Lightning context and make it simple and effective, it has these other trade-offs, right? Like, either we need Bolt 12 to be available, or maybe that person has to have a web server that's accessible for them, or they need some other provider to help them. And I know this is something you've been focused on, haven't you? So do you want to just elaborate a bit on how you're seeing this problem and solutions for it?
Well, yeah, I have a product called Lightning Box, which is basically like a Lightning address server. Just to recap, a Lightning address builds upon LNUL Pay, So it's like a synthetic sugar on top of it. So you have like a easy to read and write handle. Like an, it looks like an email address basically, but it lets you pay to a to an LNRL pay code. So I have like a little project that basically lets Lightning wallets use a Lightning address code. And like normally when you use Lightning address today, you have to use like a custodial wallet, or you have to use your own routing node if you have one. Not everyone has that. So my Lightning address server will basically just contact the Lightning wallet on your phone and request an invoice for you. So that's a way to, like, it's not custodial in the sense that it's still the Lightning wallet's invoice, but there is like a trusted party that you talk to and get an invoice from. So that's a way to solve the problem with getting Lightning addresses to non-custodial or self-custodial wallets. So that's something I'm working with. And you will also be able to easily self-host this Lightning box server for yourself. So if you are knowledgeable about these things, you can set it up yourself. But yeah, so because right now, if you look at Noster, for example, most people on Noster, they use some kind of custodial Lightning address. And I would like to give them an option to not use custodial wallet there, because right now basically 99% are using wallet of Satoshi or some custodial Lightning wallet for their Lightning address. So I'm trying to fix that problem basically.
Yeah, right. And I see that as well. I have a Lightning address using BTC Pay, but that doesn't support the same NIP for zaps and things like this, so it's not as slick as an example. So because I wanted to have a non-custodial one, but I'm not yet at the level that I could have a non-custodial zap functionality. And maybe that gets built into BTC Pay as an example. But I think, like you said, the problem remains that not everybody can easily do this. So I guess, as I understand, the Lightning box idea is it's almost like a in-between, and it forwards the request and says, hey, give me an invoice.
Yes.
And then that mobile user, let's say, gives an invoice. What happens in the case that mobile is offline or, you know, not responsive?
Oh, yeah, exactly. That's a big problem in general with Lightning, right? That if your wallet is not online, you cannot pay in Lightning. So basically, my idea with Lightning Box is to just take the payment custodially. Like the Lightning Box server will just take the payment on behalf of the user. Now, the difference between Lightning Box and something like a custodial wallet is that the next time the user opens up their wallet, they're supposed to automatically like withdraw the funds that are available inside the box. So that's where the Lightning Box comes from. So it holds it's like a cache for your payments. So that's how I is solving the problem right now with Lightning Box. It just takes the payment on behalf of the user. But if the user is already online when the payment comes, then it can just forward the invoice request to the actual app in question. So that's how I solve it right now. There are some very neat ideas on how to actually solve this problem as well. It's called like asynchronous payments, which is like a fancy way to not do this custodially. So you will basically have like an LSP in front of you that holds the payment, not settle it. It's not custodial, but it just holds the payment until you eventually come online in order to receive the payment. So that's called async payments, but it's, as far as I understand, no one is pursuing that technology right now, but it's probably something that we will eventually see. So that will kind of solve the offline payment problem a bit. And I'm also looking into that, but right now I will settle with the things I have.
Yeah, right. Yeah, it sounds like you're working on a lot.
Yeah.
And I recall chatting about that with Matt Carello, who I think he wrote that idea to the Lightning Dev mailing list in maybe October 2021, around there, just off the top of my head. But it requires a lot of things, right? It would require like an onion layer for messaging. It would require like
these
ways for the LSP, the Lightning Service Providers, to be able to hold it and then forward it forward that payment and doing it in a slick way that doesn't lock up liquidity across the network like this. So there's, and I think that kind of comes to where we have this sort of, there are people who have the today problem, right? They need to be able to take donations today, but there's kind of solutions in the future that are more technically sound, let's say, and more decentralized in a way. And then we have things that are, that can sort of work for today that could be used, let's say. And so I guess Lightning Box is an example. So where exactly is Lightning Box at right now? Is it mainly in like just an early testing phase, or are you actually using it now, or where is it at?
Oh, well, it's at an early testing phase. Like, we have an upcoming feature for Blixt that lets the wallet always be online. Like, it never closes down. So my Blixt wallet on my phone is always active and ready to get incoming Lightning address requests. So my Lightning address, hampus@blixtwallet.com, will, like, if my Lightning Box will forward all requests to that Lightning address to my phone 24/7 right now. So I'm currently evaluating the feasibility of this. So it's kind of not ready right now, but it's approaching to be ready. The Lightning Box idea, we'll probably have some kind of closed beta soon.
Yeah, I'm curious what the holdups are, and and I'm curious what the battery drain is, and you know, the CPU drain on your phone when you're doing that.
It's actually not that bad. I thought it would be much worse, but it's not. I talked a bit about Matt Corral about this. Like, if you use the 4G or 5G modem and not Wi-Fi, then it gets a bit more worse then. But if you're just on Wi-Fi, it basically doesn't drain that much at all. So that's kind of interesting. But I suppose that depends on the phone you're using and so on. But at least for me, the trade-offs are definitely worth it. So that's kind of surprising, because I remember that I tested this for Blixt like 3 years ago, and the result was much worse back then. So it's definitely feasible, for sure.
Right.
Like, we have around 3 or 4 people right now that are running this always on mode, like, all the time. So it does work. Yeah. So that's kind of interesting. So, and also for the upcoming Lightning Box, like, beta, it will not have the custodial part, probably. We'll just try the forwarding part, like forwarding the request to the phone. So we'll see. We will evaluate the feasibility of this, but it's looking pretty good, actually, I think.
Yeah. I'm also curious how the phone is being notified. Is it using Google Play services, or is it using something like this to get a notification that, hey, you've got an incoming payment, wake up and give me an invoice?
Sure. It's actually using, like, Lightning itself. So, you know, that as the app is always, like, it's right now it's always on the Blixt Wallet app. So that means that it has a connection to the Blixt Wallet node as well. So what happens is that basically the Blixt Wallet node sends, like, a peer-to-peer message to the Blixt Wallet app. And then Blixt Wallet, the app, responds back with the invoice, basically. So it's just reusing Lightning itself to send messages back and forth. Because, like, Lightning is also like a peer-to-peer network, right? So you connect to each other. So there is no need for push. We could use that as well, but in this case, I just reuse the Lightning network connection itself, which is quite neat.
Fantastic. Yeah, so I am curious to see where things go with that and where things end up meshing together with, you know, if some people are using Bolt 12 or some people are using LNURL and kind of how it all mixes together. But I guess it's all about having the right building blocks that come together. So, you know, as an example, let's say somebody tries to take a payment, but they don't have enough inbounder capacity. And then, you know, how is the user going to be told, oh, hey, you need to get some more inbound liquidity? Or is it using like an on-the-fly approach? I'm curious what your thoughts are there and what you're looking at in Blixt for that.
Oh, yes. Yeah, we have like a on-the-fly channel opening service right now called Dunder inside Blixt. So I'm definitely for that kind of functionality. There may also be a use case for, I suppose, they call like hosted channels. Like, there are some wallets called Simple Bitcoin Wallet and Open Bitcoin Wallet by Fiat Jeff that they basically have a channel that is custodial, like a custodian. Like there, you can still, it still uses Lightning itself, but the funds are not guaranteed on chain, let's say. And in the worst case scenario, I'm thinking that there may be a use case for using these kinds of things if there are no like inbound liquidity, because it's, there's also a problem with all the time opening new channels, because that has some like upfront cost for the LSP that needs to reserve Bitcoin for that and so on. So that may be a use case to like mix non-custodial and custodial things together, because yeah, if you have like a hosted channel, then you wouldn't need to open a real channel, at least not immediately. You may do that like later on, because in my opinion, like custodial services and so on, they are bad over long periods of time, and they're also bad if the amount is like, if it's a large amount of money, then it gets bad. I don't think it's so bad if it's just a small amount of money that matters about. So that's also an interesting thing you can do in Lightning.
Yeah, all right. And let's chat a little bit about Blixt then. So I had a chance to play around with it. I thought it was interesting, and you know, the approach where you spin up the wallet, you fund it on chain, and then it automatically opens a channel, and then you're able to, you know, make and take some payments, although you got to make a payment before you can receive. I didn't get to trying the Dunder part out, and I noticed there was also an LNBig and BitRefill link in the app, so that way the user gets told, hey, you can go get an inbound channel from here, use LN URL channel in the case of LNBig. So yeah, I guess those are a few things. Do you want to just give us an overview about Blixt Wallet? What is it? Who's the target market for that?
Sure. So yeah, so Blixt Wallet is a self-custodial, non-custodial Lightning node wallet. So it runs like basically LND underneath the Lightning node implementation LND. It just runs it straight up on the phone actually. Via, and also it uses like an SPV Bitcoin node. It doesn't use a full node, but it's called Neutrino for syncing the actual blockchain. It uses Neutrino, and it's kind of like a very flexible but also easy to use wallet. Like you have the standard setup in Blixt where you will just connect to and open channels with the Blixt node. So that's like the easy way to use Blixt. But you also have the opportunity and ability to easily open a channel to your own routing node and so on if you have one. Like that's a choice you have. And so on. And you can also like connect your own Bitcoin node and such things. And we also have like almost full coverage of the LNURL protocol suite. So you can enjoy all the different kinds of things you can do with LNURL, like logging into LN markets or Collider and so on. And you know, all the things that we talked about before, you can basically do with Blixt. So I've tried to make sure that I cover all the different features that are available there. So yeah, it's like I'm trying to please like both audiences. Like if you just want an easy to use wallet, if you're a Bitcoiner, you can use Blixt. But also at the same time, if you want to customize your setup and connect to your own routing node in your home, your umbrella, let's say, you can very easily do that as well. So yeah, it tries to present it all in a very concise and easy to use manner as well. So that's like the honest, like a lot of people likes to connect to their own node and so on. So yeah.
Yeah. And so when you set it up and you fund it on chain, as the typical setup goes, who is that channel being opened with? Is that being opened with the Blixt node?
Yes. Yeah. So then the normal operation is that it will open a channel to the Blixt LSP node, basically. It's called Blixt Wallet, the node itself. You can look it up on mempool.space. So that works kind of like, it works like Phoenix and Breeze. It will hook you up to the Blixt Projects node, because it is well established in the network, so it will guarantee that you will have a good experience and so on. So that's what happens in the normal way of operation.
Yeah.
So that's the same with the Dunder LSP, that the on-the-fly channel functionality, it will by default open a channel towards with the Blix node, basically. But everything is made in a manner that it's easy to set up yourself.
Back to the show in a moment. When it comes to securing your Bitcoin, consider the hardware you are using. I personally use the ColdCard Mark IV, which is a great device by the team over at CoinKite.com. Now, CoinKite make a range of products, but the Mark IV is the top device that they currently offer. It has a range of features. It has two secure elements. You can use it with microSD, so you don't even have to phone home. So that's a really cool feature that you can just plug this device into the wall, not into a device, and spin up the device, spin up your seed, get your 12 or 24 words, and use microSD to move things back and forth, or you can even use NFC in the latest cold card. Now, they also have the Q1 available for pre-order, so you can find that if you are interested in a QR-supporting device. That website is coinkite.com, and use code Livera for a discount on your cold cards. Unchained Capital are making it easy to use multi-signature, and Unchained makes it secure, transparent, easy to use, and sovereign. So with multi-signature, you are removing single points of failure in your setup, and this can help give you that peace of mind, knowing that you can make one or two small mistakes here and there, depending on what mistake you're making, and not lose the whole stack. And this may not be true if you are in a single signature context. And of course, if you are leaving your coins with a custodian or an exchange, you need to get them off. You need to learn to self-custody, and Unchained can help you with this. They've got a range of ways they can do this. They have free content available on their website. You can even go and set it up on your own if you're confident and you're willing to play around. Or of course, they have a concierge onboarding program where you can pay up front. They'll ship you the devices. They'll do all call with you, they'll walk you through this and get you set up. So go to unchained.com/concierge, use code Livera for a discount there. And finally, Blockstream have a community called Build on L2. This is really important for those of you who are building on Core Lightning or the Liquid Network. So this is an interactive community platform. It'll be useful for those of you who are builders. Whether you are a product manager, a designer, an engineer, there are some events as well as a mentorship program to fast track your success and just have a community space to learn alongside other Bitcoiners who are building on the future of Bitcoin Layer 2. So there's a range of different technologies associated with Liquid and Core Lightning. So it's a great place to go and learn more there. So go and sign up. It's over at buildonl2.com. And now back to the show. Yeah. And so the way I'm seeing it is it's similar to... In some ways, it's similar to Breeze, like because you've got Neutrino and you're using LND under the hood. Perhaps in other ways, it's sort of like because you're writing down, you know, the 24-word seed, it's an AE or AZ, which is the LND style, obviously, because it's using LND in the background. So it kind of has like a mix of some of the different well-known wallets out there. But at the same time, it is a node as well. So I think that's an important point for people to understand that it's not just a wallet. It's actually... the Lightning node is running on the device. And so that can be a bit sort of crazy to think about if you haven't really like thought about what's happening in the background. So then presumably, you know, that means you have to have the graph, as in the channel graph, synced on the phone. And then your phone is calculating the route where it's sending coins on Lightning. So it has to know, oh, okay, this is Hampus's node and I'm sending him 1,000 sats as an example. And I need to calculate that route.
Yeah, exactly. As you said, it's running LND, LND, like Breeze does and so on. So it does, it's basically the same software being used on LND. And we'll work with that as far as we can. Like if Lightning starts to get bigger and bigger, it may not be feasible to do this anymore. But I think it's worth trying out to just have a real Lightning node on the phone and everything that means, like, so. So it needs to sync the network graph and so on, which is quite bloaty right now. But it does work. Like we have people using this on a daily basis, so it does work. But it's not as, like, let's say, lightweight as Moon, for example, because it is a real Lightning node inside Blix Wallet, same as Breeze and so on.
Yeah, I see. Yeah, because as I understand, the way Moon is a great wallet also, but it's more like a Bitcoin on-chain wallet that can pay Lightning, you know, whereas it's not natively Lightning. Although I understand the Moon guys are looking to shift to a natively Lightning approach. It's just currently, it's more like an on-chain wallet, or at least you can kind of think of it like that.
Yeah, exactly. It doesn't, like with Blix, you, as you said, when you do a payment in Blix wallets, your app will actually find a path to the destination, like to the receiver. As far as I understand, with Moon and so on, you're not really doing those things, right? Because it's not like a real Lightning node underneath. So there are some differences here and some trade-offs being made.
Yeah, and I think that's worthwhile thinking about depending on which countries you're in as well. So, for example, Anita Posh did a recent, you know, test or trial with some different wallets, and I think what she found, at least for people who are in low connectivity environments, she found Phoenix was really easy, and that kind of makes sense because Phoenix wallet is not doing the route finding, right? It's a trampoline routing style, and it's offloading that work to the async node. So. Yes. Maybe some wallets work better in the Western world where you have, let's say, high connectivity and your phone maybe is higher capability and it can do that sort of stuff. And maybe in areas where, let's say, you want to be natively Lightning but maybe not doing everything, you can offload a little bit more. It's offloading more of it to the server, let's say.
Yeah, for sure. Like I saw Anita's Porsche, I saw that report she made. And yeah, if you have a very bad like internet connection, like she showed in these areas, then like syncing the graph and so on will be very messy, let's say. So something like trampoline routing will definitely help there. And it may be the case that we as well need to move to trampoline if Lightning keeps growing like very much. We'll see about that. It's something to keep in mind, at least, that source routing may not be feasible forever. Right now it's feasible, but we'll see if things start to grow even bigger than it is right now. So that's something I'm also looking into for Blix, like having trampoline.
Oh, right. Okay. So yeah, basically that's a possibility in the future as well. Let's say the network does trampoline routing.
Yeah, I'm looking into that. And I know that
you could try to build that in there.
Because it needs some work in LND to be able to do that. But, you know, it's something that we need to look into at least. So because if it starts to not scale anymore for the phone, then we kind of need to move to trampoline as well. But for the time being, it's definitely feasible. So, but we'll see about that.
Yeah. One other area I wanted to touch on is the contact list, because I think this is something that is going to become more and more important. I think people having regular contacts helps you live on Bitcoin. So as an example, if you have employees and you need to regularly pay them out, that's an example. Or if you have somebody who you're regularly paying Lightning, then having this contact list is actually, I think, an important feature. So do you want to touch on this and what you've done with the contact list in Blixt?
Sure, yeah. So you have like in Blixt wallet, I have like a contacts and services, I think it's called. So basically it's right now it's like a contact list for LNURL pay and also LNURL withdraw. So you can store your like LN markets account in that list basically. But in the future, I hope to expand this to also support keys and payments and Bolt 12 payments and so on. But right now it's mostly for Lightning address, LNURL pay and also LNURL withdraw. But this also goes hand in hand with the Lightning Box concept, because as Blix users get their Lightning address, you can store them in the contact list. So it feels more like a real wallet, let's say, with these kinds of features. So that's something I'm working on as well, fixing the like contact list feature. And also this may also connect in the future with Noster as well, because there's a lot of interest in Noster accounts as well, I think. But yeah.
Yeah, that's an interesting idea as well. I hadn't really thought about that. So in terms of Blixt today, does it have, it'll give you a Lightning address, like a custodial Lightning address?
No, not right now, but I hope to have something ready maybe through the summer or so.
I see.
We'll try to get some, because this is all pretty new. Like right now, it's basically just my phone that has this Lightning Box thing. But we'll try to get something out like a beta pretty soon here, because there's been a lot of enthusiasm about this this service, because I reckon that most people want to have some kind of like not completely trusted custodial thing, like, because they have, right now most people use the custodial wallets, right? So there's a lot of enthusiasm surrounding this topic everywhere. So I'm definitely working as hard as I can to fix this. It'll be interesting.
Yeah, and I think there's been a lot of discussion online. I see both sides of this, right? One side of it is, look how easy and slick it is to get people using Lightning. But then on the other hand, you see the criticism saying, look at all these people who are using custodial things. And that's not in the ethos of Bitcoin. And maybe some of those people are more in the Lightning hater gang. But nevertheless, you know, the custodial criticism is there. And so it's worthwhile looking at what ways, you know, people can minimize that concern or minimize the custodialism and sort of shift it more towards a self-custodial. And I know obviously you're doing, you know, everything in your power to help that. But I think it's worthwhile looking at that. And even the Lightning Box idea, I'm curious as well your thoughts. Is it possible to build something that maybe it's, and you know, maybe that's kind of what Lightning Box is, right? The idea is it's maybe it's custodial, but then as soon as your phone comes on, it kind of says, hey, I'm online, send me all the payments I got. And so that way it's only, you're minimizing the amount of time that you are custodial, right?
Yes, exactly, yeah. I also want to touch briefly on the convenience of custodial wallets, like, because I don't think we can fight against that, because there will always be a convenience factor with the custodial wallets, because as we see right now with the Lightning address, like, probably if Lightning address didn't exist, something else will come up and be the convenience thing that people use. So we can just try to fight that as good as you can as self-custodial wallets. And so that's what I'm trying to do with Lightning address, Lightning Box, sorry. I'm trying to give like an option for people to use. So and also you can do some kind of fingerprinting as well, I suppose. Because what I mean by that is that, let's say that your phone sends to a Lightning address, you could possibly save that like identity, the pub key that you send to, and make sure that it matches for the next time you make a payment. So then you have some kind of security that a rogue Lightning Box server can just all of a sudden become rogue and change to its own invoice instead of the receiver's, because you save that information within the sender wallet. So that's some of the ways you can circumvent the problem of the trust being seen.
I see. So let me understand that a bit. So I guess you're trying to respond to one of the criticisms or concerns that I've seen. I believe Matt Carello actually raised this one, where he was saying, okay, yeah, you're kind of non-custodial, but actually you're still trusting in the sense that that server, the Lightning Box server, could give wrong invoices to the other party to fund someone else instead of that money coming to you. As in, put in other words, it could siphon off the payments that are intended for you but going to itself. And so I guess what you're trying to say is you could try to mitigate that?
Yes, exactly, yeah. Like right now with the custodial wallets, they can all siphon from the users all the time and just rug pull at any time, right? With Lightning Box, I'm trying to minimize the risks as much as possible. But I suppose you could also, like, the thing with Lightning Box is that it could potentially also be integrated with Bolt 12, for example. Let's say that you fetch a Bolt 12 invoice the first time you send to a Lightning address, then the wallet could save that Bolt 12 offer for the future and not rely on the Lightning address, Lightning Box, sorry, server anymore for the future. So there are some interesting synergies with these kinds of things as well that you can do. But I think things need to be taken in steps right now. So I'm trying my best to minimize the custodial risks of Lightning addresses, because right now the non-custodial wallets, they're losing on the walkover basically, and the custodial wallets are just winning, because there's no option at all right now other than self-hosting your own Lightning address server, which not everyone is capable of doing, right? So that's what I'm trying to accomplish.
Yeah, right. And I mean, for me, I'm like a very much an enthusiast. I have one, but that's only because I'm running a BTC Pay server, right? Otherwise, it'd be a lot of work, and it's probably more work than it's worth to do that. Whereas if it can be made easier, then, yeah, you know, we're going to have a lot more people able to do it right now. Because I guess you need a domain and you need a web server, and not everybody has that, right?
Yeah, certificate, yeah. Yeah, and people in general do not like to run servers, right? It's a very, like, tech savvy thing to do. So if you want to appeal to other people, you need, like, we need to make some trade-offs here. And I think that, like, the Lightning Box trade-off is a sound one, but sure, I'm open to criticism, of course. But I think it's at least better than purely custodial solutions, let's say.
Right, and I think that's a fair argument to make. Now, hopefully, let's say the vision in the future might be that, let's say you've got this contact list and these users are all non-custodial or self-custodial, and maybe they have a Lightning Box server that they're using. And maybe at the start, maybe they're using like somebody else's Lightning Box server, and then eventually maybe they can set up their own Lightning Box server. And then now you have these contact lists where everyone can just seamlessly shoot each other money, just like people are doing on Nostra today with Zaps, or just in general with Lightning addresses. And it makes it really slick and easy to kind of go back and forth between services that you're using, whether it's LN Markets or something else, or, you know, other services, and just other people who you are regularly paying or receiving from. So I guess that's like a future possible vision. What do you see? What else can you see as a future vision that you're trying to build towards?
That's a good question. we can touch a bit about Lightning Box. Like, it's supposed to also be very easy to self-host if you're capable of doing that, right? Because it's right now it only relies on having like an LND node. There is no complex things that are needed to set up your own like Lightning Box solution. So the barrier to entry is as low as it possibly can be, right? At least that's what I'm trying to accomplish there. So yeah, so that's...
So one other question, does the Lightning Box runner have to also run a Lightning node, or is it more that that's being done on the on your phone and Lightning Box is more just... Because then the other aspect is that person has to run a routing node.
Kinda, yeah. Well, it needs to... Like, if you want to take... It depends on like there are different modes of operations for Lightning Box. Like if the Lightning Box provider wants to take the payment on behalf of the user, like custodially, then they will need to have a routing node as well. But if they just want to forward payments to the wallet, then it basically just needs a Lightning node. It doesn't need to actually be a routing node. It just needs to somehow communicate with
like run channels and stuff. Yeah.
Yeah, it needs to communicate with the wallet basically in some way. So it depends on the mode of operation. But normally the Lightning Box provider will probably be a routing node as well. But there's no hard dependence on that. No.
Yeah. In terms of fees, can you talk to us a little bit about that? In terms of, let's say you're running this Dunder LSP. And what kinds of fees people can expect to pay in terms of on-the-fly channels. So as an example, when you set up your Lightning node and you need some inbound liquidity, or you need to be able to, you know, get set up quickly, what kinds of fees are we going to be paying for those on-the-fly channels? And then what kinds of routing fees would we be paying, and what kind of routing fees would we expect to see as the user?
Sure. Well, right now, everything is basically very altruistically made. So there's no like fee per se. Like the Dunder, you will have to cover like the transaction, like the on-chain transaction fee. You will have to cover yourself.
The chain fee,
but
yeah.
There is no like, yeah, exactly. So that's what you need to cover right now. It's very like altruistically made right now with the services, but probably in the future we'll have some kind of scheme. But right now I'm just trying to get people onto Lightning basically, so I don't take any cut neither for Lightning Box nor for the Dunder right now. So that's also with the channel, like the Lightning channels themselves do not have any fees either, like the private channels that you open with the Blix node. But that will probably change in the future, but not right now. It's just free.
Yeah. And on that question, do you have any thoughts around profitability or sustainability of this project, right? Are you looking to, like, where would you charge fees in order to keep the project sustainable?
Well, yeah, I think it makes the most sense to have some kind of fee on the actual channels themselves, right, that you open with the Blix node. So that's, as I said, right now there is no fee, but in the future there will probably be some kind of cut. Like, and that's kind of similar to what the others are doing. I think Blue Wallet and Wallet Satoshi, like Blue Wallet is closing down, but they also have some percentage cut on the actual payments being made. So that's probably where we'll do things as well with Twixt. And also, we'll probably have some kind of fee for the actual services that you use. So if you want a Lightning box, you will probably have to pay some kind of fee, because that will cover spam as well if you have to pay for getting a Lightning address. So external services as such will probably also have a fee in Blixt, but right now everything is for free, basically.
Yeah, awesome. Well, I had a quick play around just, you know, for an hour or so, maybe a bit less. Found it interesting, and yeah, listeners, have a go of it and see what you think, and let Humpus know what you think about it. I know there's a Telegram channel as well, so people can jump into that. And let's talk a little bit about what you want to see, like in Bitcoin and Lightning. Let's start with Lightning. So what are you most interested to see in terms of improvements coming? What are you know, if there was like your wish list, what's top of your wish list?
The wish list is long one, but we can talk about some things at least. There's so many good things that I want to have, but I am very interested in something called the stackless payments. So what that means I just briefly explain how it works. So right now when you make...
Yeah, just give a brief explanation. What is a stackless payment?
Sure. So right now when you make a Lightning payment, your wallet will basically, it will just make, it will split the payment in different shards, let's say, and with different amounts, so it can find like a path to the destination. Like let's say it splits into three paths, and then it will try to find the receiver node somehow. But the problem is that, let's say that one of these HLCs, they get stuck in the middle because the node that was supposed to forward the payment is very slow to respond. Like, let's say it's a slow node in general. So that means that you will have a lot of like delay in Lightning. That's one of the reasons why Lightning sometimes is just slow to make payments, because shards and parts of the payments can get stuck while trying to traverse to the destination, basically the receiver node. So the idea with stackless payments is that you can burst out a lot of small shards, and just enough of them have to reach the destination. Like, it doesn't matter if two of them get stuck somewhere, because eventually if enough parts of the payment gets to the destination, the payment will go through, basically. So that's the one way to like mitigate this problem of having slow node network slow down your payments. So that's something I really want to see, because if you're going to have Lightning in like brick and mortar shops and so on, and use Lightning for real, it's kind of fragile to rely on nodes not being slow in the network and so on. Yeah, so that is what stackless is about. And I think that's something we need to eventually do, but it requires some more functionality and tech for Lightning to work. It requires something called PTLCs. So that's one of the things I'm really, really looking forward to having in Lightning.
Yeah, have you got any thoughts on splicing? I guess that would be useful for you on the Blixt LSP side of it, right?
That will, yeah, exactly, right. That will be really useful for Blixt. Like, so splicing is basically can open, like again, if you want more funds in Shanda's channel, you can basically make a new on-chain fund channel, but it will merge with the already existing channel if you splice it in, basically. So that's a splice in. So you can add more funds to an existing channel. Because like you don't want to have too many Lightning channels in your wallet, because that means that the invoice QR code will eventually get too large to be able to scan. So you want to have it like at the maximum 5 channels. So that's a way to solve this, is that you do the splice in, so you can add more funds to the channels. Then you also have the concept of splice out. So if you want to send an on-chain transaction but you only have funds in Lightning, you can basically reuse your channel to send someone on-chain via an on-chain transaction. And then you also open a new channel at the same time, basically, with the remaining funds. So those things are very important things for improving like UX for Lightning node wallets.
Fantastic. Yeah, so we can think of it like resizing the channel while also making or taking a payment. So those will be handy to see. I know our friend Dusty is working on some of that stuff, and he's making some progress on splicing. So it'll be interesting to see if that comes to fruition, and I'm hopeful that it does. Also want to chat a little bit about Bitcoin in general, like Bitcoin soft forks and things like this, because I've seen this is something you're quite vocal about. Obviously, it can be controversial, but at the same time, is it worthwhile talking about? Because are there benefits that outweigh the costs? Let's hear it from your perspective. How should we think about soft forks in Bitcoin?
Yeah, I think, well, I think we need to figure out, like, Bitcoin is not perfect and it's not fully developed, right? At least not in my opinion, because when Satoshi first developed and created Bitcoin, he wanted to solve this double spending problem, basically. Like, he wanted to make sure you have like a decentralized network where you can pay someone and you can't double spend and so on. So he fixed that by the ledger, the blockchain, and also with proof of work, right? So that's the main primary problem he attempted to solve, the double spending problem, the Byzantine generals problem. But like, people were quick to point out that Bitcoin has a lot of issues, and the primary one is mostly scaling, right? It scales badly and so on, and also privacy is a problem. So Lightning, for example, tries to help and fix the scaling problem, but it's not the end all be all, right? It still needs to continue to, we still need to continue to work with Bitcoin to make it scale better. So that's why I think that we shouldn't give up on soft forks and network upgrades. We still need to improve the network so that we can handle all the load, basically, and so on. And so that's my general view about soft forking, that Bitcoin is not perfect the way it is. Like, it's far from perfect, actually. It's a brilliant innovation, but we need to make sure that we can use it, basically, if that makes sense. So there are a lot of soft forks right now that people are discussing and so on.
So are there any particular soft forks that you are really interested in or that you would want to see?
I mean, I think that the soft fork called NPreVout, Zcash NPreVout, is because it's a fairly simple soft fork, but it lets us do some interesting stuff for Lightning. It lets us do something called L2, which is a very good upgrade for the Lightning network that helps with scalability. And it also lets, like, and NPreVout also lets us do like simple space chains basically. So a space chain is basically a one-way peg to a side chain. So it lets us do that. So that's one of the soft forks that people have been discussing for quite some time, and my understanding is that it's kind of ready to get deployed. We just need to discuss it and get consensus around it. But we also have there's also the new guy in town, which is the OP Vault soft fork. So what that is, a vault is basically a way to have some insurance or security for your Bitcoin. So you will lock your funds in a vault, and the only way to get funds out from the vault is to send it to a specific Bitcoin address. So if you see some kind of unintended withdrawal from your vault, you could easily make sure they're swept to a safe location, basically. So these kinds of things will help for exchanges and other entities dealing with a lot of Bitcoin and want to have some insurance. But it can also be helpful for normal users to have some kind of vaulting service that they rely on to have some safety. So those are two things that I'm very interested in and looking into.
Yeah, and one other thing. You mentioned the space chains idea. I know that's something by Ruben Thompson. What's actually, for you, what's the interesting part of the space chain aspect? Why would that be interesting to you?
It's a good way to start experimenting with the sidechain. Like, it's not a sidechain in the traditional sense, because it's not like a two-way peg. Like, a space chain is basically a one-way peg, right? So you can send funds into the space chain, but you, in the normal operation, you cannot get funds out. You basically burn your Bitcoin. But it's maybe a good way to start experimenting with some functionality and stuff. You can do like a DNS space chain. So for example, for the concerns regarding Lightning Box, you could potentially have like a space chain DNS chain for retrieving like a Lightning address, for example, as an interesting thought. So I'm mostly interested in trying these kinds of side chains out, basically. It's a very like low footprint with the space chain stuff as well, because like you have this sovereign rollup that got popular some weeks ago, and they're, as far as I understand, they're very bloaty on the actual chain. But for space chain, it's very like low footprint on the main Bitcoin chain, which is quite interesting.
Yeah, I see. Yeah. Interesting stuff. I haven't looked as much into the space chain stuff. So yeah, just because I think I kind of disregarded it early because I just thought, oh, one way peg, what's useful about that? Why is that, you know, interesting? But definitely any prev out and
yeah, it's a common criticism. Yeah, yeah.
And op vault are certainly interesting to me. I think they would be cool and probably good things to add. And I think it's important to see that these are basically opt-in, right? People could have it and they don't hurt the non-users who don't want to use AnyProv out or OpVault. But AnyProv out could help us scale in terms of more people using Bitcoin self-custodially. So that's why, for me, I'm interested in the idea. I did an episode recently with Greg Sanders as well, talking about it. And of course, there's also an episode with James O'Byrne about OpVault for any listeners. But yeah, I think that's probably a good spot to finish up there. But if you've got any closing thoughts there for listeners, and of course, where can people find you online?
Sure. You can find me on Twitter at Hampus_S. That's HAMPUS_S. And yeah, I mean, if you like a Lightning wallet, try a Blix wallet out. We have like a great Blix wallet community with a lot of enthusiastic people and that are helping out and so on. So check out the Telegram group if you're interested. And yeah, you can go to blixwallet.com and find the wallet there. And also you can find my Noster pub key on my Twitter account, so you can find it there instead.
Oh, great. Yeah, I'll include all the links in the show notes. So thanks, Hampus, for joining me.
Thank you.
I hope you enjoyed the show, and as I'm now going to be traveling for a little bit, I'm attending Lightning Con in Vietnam and then Bitcoin Island Retreat. So just so you know, there may be a gap in episodes and the next few episodes might come out in early April. And if you got value out of the show, make sure to like and share it and give it a good review on whatever platform. Thanks for your help out there, and I'll see you in the Citadels.